In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
As it all too often happens, when it comes to pretty much anything the government does, whether it's healthcare or the environment, government is more often in the way than it is a help. Welcome. Glad you're joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show. I'd like to thank those of you who wrote in to let us know you enjoyed having my producer on the show last week. And like I said, we'll have to do that more often. But back to what I said about government being in the way. It's for the simple reason that some government bureaucrat or elected official who is paid directly by lobbyists to push their industry, a quid pro quo if there ever was one, decides winners and losers through regulations, through raising taxes and fees on the wrong industries while giving tax credits to the right industries, and sometimes through direct government funding and handouts. Keep in mind, these bureaucrats and elected officials have zero experience in the industry, and yet they are making decisions for those industries. But it's not just the flow of money. It's government directly interfering with normal market forces. In the green industry, for example, they gave massive amounts of subsidy funding to solar and wind at a time when people didn't want them. Just think of the normal hurdles to bring a product to market. Sometimes it's millions in research and development, millions more in prototypes, and still millions more beyond that in marketing and advertising. And all along the way, it's constantly assessing whether that product will create a return on investment, a profit. But when the government steps in and hands billions in taxpayer dollars to a favored industry, it circumvents all of that normal process. Who needs market testing and market assessment when customers are told they have to buy it? Who needs environmental controls when you can get cheap rare earth minerals from China where there are no environmental controls? But there are dozens of massive acid lakes because of the rare earth mining to make the solar and wind energy. But it's for the environment. And yet taxpayer-subsidized solar and wind companies go out of business because there isn't a market demand for it. And all of this circumventing market forces means it bypasses an incredibly important normal outgrowth of the market, innovation. You don't need to find new and improved anything to create a profit when the government hands you money as your profit. You don't have to improve your product, you just have to improve your lobbying efforts, which you'll then use to get more politicians elected to hand you even more money rather than spend it on research and development. And you'll use that government money to fund nonprofit groups to help you apply pressure to politicians to give you yet even more money. And on it goes. But bypassing innovation, thanks to government intervention, is the real tragedy. Take, for example, a recent tweet from Pharma that highlighted innovation in T-cell therapy, which was originally designed to defeat leukemia. But this therapy is now on the verge of defeating multiple myeloma, a plasma cell cancer. As Pharma rightly says, quote, "That's the thing about breakthroughs. One can lead to many more." And that's the issue. When government decides the winners, innovation doesn't follow what's successful. It follows what's funded. It's why innovation happens in free market countries far more than in government-strangled countries. In free market countries, you're rewarded for being successful, for being innovative, for being profitable because of your success in innovation, rather than being rewarded for who your political friends are. Think of the attacks on coal. State governments like Oregon and California and pretty much anywhere Democrats thrive, they hate coal. But did you know that the gas that first powered the gas lamps in London in 1812 and later in the U.S. was not natural gas? It was gas made from distilling coal. George Washington Carver famously created over 300 innovations from peanuts. How many innovations from coal have been overlooked or never developed because of the government's hatred for coal? Or look at hemp. For more than a century, growing hemp, the non-marijuana variety, was largely banned. Now that it's legal again, thanks to the Trump administration getting government out of the way, we're discovering all sorts of innovation, from building and construction to CBD and medicine, car parts, and far, far more. It's the same with timber. As we previously said on iSpy with our second guest today, Dr. Bob Zybak, Oregon should be the world leader in innovation for timber harvesting and sustainable forest management. But because the government has strangled the timber industry in Oregon, we import wood from Canada, or worse, from China and Southeast Asia, where they couldn't care less about the environment. And here we are, 2020. On January 1st, Oregon's ban on plastic bags went into effect. But back in the 1990s, liberal environmental policies destroyed Oregon's lumber mills, which made paper bags you got for free in stores. Thanks to liberal attacks on timber, tens of thousands of people lost their jobs, communities were ruined, school funding slashed, counties on the verge of bankruptcy. Over the years, stores were then pushed to use plastic bags rather than paper because it saved trees. You know what we didn't have in the 1990s? Islands of paper bags floating in the ocean. And here we are in 2020. Liberals banned plastic bags and now command you to use paper bags. Except now you're also forced to pay 5 or 10 cents each for them, not the state pockets. How many other uses of and innovations from wood have gone overlooked because Oregon's government pushed logging to the brink of extinction? Stronger building materials, obviously. But did you know that you can make a gas out of wood pulp? Who knows? Maybe by now we'd even have the perfect paper bag. Lighter, stronger, more durable, and yet fully biodegradable. You know, environmental. Speaking of 2020, HB 2020, Oregon's carbon tax cap and trade bill that the Republicans walked out on in 2019. In 2020, Oregon Democrats plan to do their best to push this bill through, this time because of climate change, because government knows better. Well, here's all you need to know when it comes to global warming. 9,000 of the last 10,000 years have been warmer than it is today. So unless you're willing to claim that Neanderthals were driving around in SUVs on their way to the mastodon hunt, mankind is clearly not causing global warming. When 9,000 of the last 10,000 years were warmer than it is today, nothing we're doing today is causing global warming. Period. In fact, if anything, many scientists are now concerned that from 2020 through 2054, there may be prolonged cooling. And there it is, full circle back to government interference with innovation. Innovation that is supposed to respond to real-life conditions. All of this potential cooling means that billions of dollars of government funding has been wasted looking in the wrong direction because it responded to lobbyists with a political agenda. And the Democrats' carbon tax bill will not help innovation. It will kill it. It will not help the environment. It will help environmentalists. But of course, that's their goal, help their political allies. It's not about the environment. It's just another tax they can lavish on their friends and friendly nonprofits who just happen to spend their money electing more Democrats. So since the current Democrats in office don't get it, we the people have to change that. They need to be driven from office before they do any more damage. Coming up on today's iSpy radio show, we'll be speaking with Angelita Sanchez, a spokeswoman from Timber Unity that will once again be heading to Salem in force, bigger and better and louder than last year. And then Dr. Bob Zybak on the disaster of cap and trade. Did you know that since California passed its cap and trade, emissions are up? Like I said, it's not about the environment. It's about using the environment to fund government. Plus, we'll have some very exciting wins in court for the timber industry. Everyone stay with us. We'll be right back. I'd like to welcome now Angelita Sanchez. She's a spokeswoman for Timber Unity. Angelita, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So for our audience who don't know very much about Timber Unity, why don't you tell us a little bit about you guys, give us some background on who all of you are and also just how you guys got started.
Okay, well, my name, like you said, is Angelita Sanchez, and I am a founding board member of Timber Unity Association. We had a truck driver who read an article that was letting him know that Stimson Lumber was potentially shutting down another mill in his area, and that really bothered him. He just could not stand to see another mill shut down, another employee lose their job, and he reached out to a couple of his logging buddies on the CB and asked them to meet with him at the state capitol to speak with Betsy Johnson about what this was about. And come to find out, it was about two bills, House Bill 2020 and House Bill 2007, and essentially that would shut down the forest lands and put all of the older commercial vehicles and equipment out of service due to carbon emission regulations. and whatnot. And so that kind of lit a fire under him. He then started a Facebook page, him, Jeff Levy, and Scott Heilman. They're the original founders. And they spread the word out to West Coast loggers on Facebook, West Coast dump truckers, all of these other Facebook groups to say, hey, we're going to have another convoy, but this time bring your trucks. And so that's when I got involved. I own a dump trucking company out of Sweet Home. I am also an owner operator. I have three of those older trucks and I drive them myself. And so me and an employee of mine joined that first convoy, and around and round we went, that capital in those trucks blaring those horns, and that's kind of how it all got started. We were on the Capitol steps and we heard Senator Peter Courtney tell us that, well, I don't know what to say, your rural way of life is over, you're just going to have to sell your stuff and move to town and get green jobs. And that he said that to the wrong folks. So we called more friends, and it just kind of went viral, word of mouth. We had maybe 20 trucks the first rally, then we had 100 trucks the second rally, and the third rally we had hundreds and hundreds of trucks and tractors and farmers and people. They said it was the biggest thing that the state of Oregon has ever seen in regards to grassroots activism. And we essentially encouraged the Republican senators, the 11 of Oregon senators, to walk out to stop that House Bill 2020.
And of course they did. And then it basically died in the Senate when the one senator from Gresham, I'm blanking on her name, basically said she couldn't support it because she got some additional information out of Boeing. And
I think that was her name. Moniz Anderson.
Yes,
I believe.
That's the one. Yes, that's the one. And you'd think with the last name of Anderson, I probably would remember that. But anyway, I thought it was great that when she just got some more information, she says, you know, I just can't support this. This is going to be too expensive. It's not going to have the impact that people think it will. And sadly, she's not running for re-election. In terms of the grassroots interests, why do you think this really caught on the way that it did?
Well, I think all the stars aligned. I don't really know. I think that the people were just so frustrated because their buddies were sitting on the Capitol steps hearing a elected official tell them, I don't know what to tell you, your rural way of life is over, and basically taking away our identity, taking away our right to work, taking away who we are against our will without even allowing the voters to vote on it by slapping an emergency clause on it. And people were just fed up.
Yeah. Well, that arrogance of that statement there from Peter Courtney, that your way of life is over. I am just astonished by that, because where do they think that they're going to get their food? Where do they think they're going to get their timber, you know, and the paper bags that now that we suddenly have to reuse again? I just don't even understand that level of thinking.
It makes absolutely no sense to any of us either, and we had to say something.
Yeah. Well, the cap and trade bill, the carbon bill, is not going away. Unfortunately, we'll be coming back, they think, in the February session. So let's talk about that in the next segment. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Angelita Sanchez, a spokeswoman for Timber Unity. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Angelita Sanchez. She's a spokeswoman for the Timber Unity Group. They had a rally famously this last summer, back in 2019, to stop House Bill 2020, the carbon cap and trade bill, and they have a new rally coming up soon. Angelita, let's go ahead and start there. We would really like to help start getting the word out now, since people are back from vacation, and I'm sure that they want to hear more about this. So when is the rally?
So we wanted to show up the first week of the short session, and the available day that they had was February 6th. Turns out that's Ronald Reagan's birthday, and we're fighting for our freedom, and it kind of just all worked out to be the best time for us to be there, February 6th.
And time of day?
So that's a little bit trickier. I believe that we're going to start with the speakers around 10 a.m., but we have folks coming from all across the state. Some are even leaving Eastern Oregon to travel 600 miles at 11 o'clock in the evening to be there the next day. So we're hoping to have our slow roll convoy from 7 to 9 and then meet at the Rick Rial Polk County Fairgrounds for staging, and then bus the folks over to the Capitol to hopefully have the speaker presentation begin at 10 a.m.
So, and you said that's the fairgrounds there? Is that what I heard?
The Polk County Fairgrounds have right. been reserved and set aside for staging of the equipment and the trucks. And then I believe we have also reserved the Salem Fairgrounds for general parking.
Do you have any idea about how many people are planning to show up?
Oh, let's just throw this wonderful number out there. I'm hoping for 10,000 people.
Wow.
I have so far about, let's say, 2,000 to 3,000 people committed.
And they're all driving trucks, or just they plan on being attendants?
Not necessarily. Everybody's driving trucks. We just want everybody to know that it's not only the truck drivers that this is going to affect. It's really going to affect every single person in the state. So if you have a truck or not, if you just have shoes on your feet, we want everybody to be there. So we have trucks and tractors and farmers and loggers and then normal everyday citizens that maybe are even stay-at-home moms. We're all joining together, united, to say no more extreme taxes.
Well, and you're right, this affects everybody because, we had talked with somebody from the Trucking Association of Oregon after the last Timber Unity rally, and it was shocking to find out something like either 80 or 90% of communities within Oregon, their only means of getting goods into those communities are through trucks. And so this does affect everybody. So for Peter Courtney to say, well, that's your end of life, or your end of your rural way of life, well, guess what? This really is going to be affecting everybody. Costs would be astronomical. In terms of getting the words out, aside from being on the iSpy radio show, how else are you getting the words out? Do you guys have like a Facebook page or something that people can go to?
We do have a Facebook page. You can search us on there at hashtag Timber Unity. It's kind of an open forum, kind of a chat room group. We also have an official Timber Unity page where we post official information and there's not as much chatter. That's two words, Timber Unity, and you'll see our logo on that one too. And then we have a website, www.timberunity.com.
Well, that's certainly easy to remember. And if you have a Twitter feed as well, I assume?
We do have a Twitter feed. We're not super active. I just have to let you know. We're just common everyday folks. We have jobs. We're not paid to do any of this. So all the stuff that we're doing to promote this is all volunteer effort. And we have so much to do and not a lot of hands to get it happening. So we're a little bit behind on the Twitter. Don't go try to find us on Twitter for the information. The best information is on the two words Timber Unity on Facebook.
Okay. So it sounds like you're not getting a lot of funding from George Soros, but you need some help. What are things people can do to help you?
We would love people to send checks. We would love people to spread the word. We have merchandise available for sale. That's one of the things that we thought would be a really great thing to do since we're all business owners. We know that the people that we're fighting for don't have very many dollars. So their little bit of donations that they gave us, we in turn bought merchandise to double the money and make this rally event happen. But that being said, we might not have enough money to do everything that we want to do for the rally, and then we'll be totally depleted by that. So any type of donations would be great.
What kinds of funds are you looking for? Are you talking several hundred, talking thousands? What types of things?
We have a budget for the rally at about $20,000.
Wow.
And it's about $8,000 just for us to hire the buses for the day to get people back and forth from the staging areas.
Wow.
So we have to have permits, we have to have porta potties, we have to have those buses. It's a lot of cost involved. We have to rent a PA system. Just the PA system is $1,200. So there's a lot of cost associated with this, and any type of help that we can get would be great. We have a PAC that you can donate to. You'll get a $50 credit from the state of Oregon if you're single, or a $100 credit from the state of Oregon if you're married, and that's how we can fight politically through that PAC.
And I took a quick look at your website while you were talking there. All of the information there in terms of donating and contacting, it looks like it's all right there. In terms of who people should contact to help, are you the person they should be, or is that also there on the webpage?
On the webpage is a direct line, but I will tell you the voicemail comes straight to me, so I'll be the one returning the calls. We have a handful of moderators on our Facebook page that can all ask questions. Okay. There's a lot of ways to get information, but yes, primarily I'm the one that you'll be talking to or looking to talk to.
Okay, and so let's talk worst case scenario. Let's say the legislators they just keep going with this cap and trade. Let's say that they do get a bill passed. Do you guys have any thoughts down the road? What would happen if that did happen?
That's just our worst nightmare. We're just really hoping to stop it before it happens. However, now that we have this PAC, we're hoping to raise some more funds too to try to assist candidates who are supportive of the natural resources industry
yes.
to run for office, win those seats, and hopefully gain some more opportunity for conservatives in the Marble Nut House.
Yes. Well, it is an election year, so I think having this rally starting off 2020 on this kind of note, I think that really sends a very powerful message. That website, again, timberunity.com. We'll link all of that information up on iSpyRadio.com as well in case you missed all of that. Angelita, I want to thank you so much for your time, and best of luck. I look forward to seeing you there at the rally.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you, too.
And once again, the Timber Unity Rally will be on February 6th. That's a Thursday. More details will be announced later on for the official start time. Up next, Dr. Bob Zybak breaking down the cap and trade and some good news for Oregon's forests. And welcome back. I'd like to welcome Dr. Bob Zybak back to the show. He holds a PhD from OSU in environmental science, and he is our longtime consultant for issues of forestry and timber. Bob, it's great to talk to you again.
Good talking to you again, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy 2020. So, needless to say, Oregon is not necessarily changing course here, at least as far as the Democrats are concerned, and they are going to be pushing through this cap and trade. I want to talk to you a little bit about that, but before we get there, interestingly enough, OSU released a study about not cutting forests. Not cutting forests is the same as halting 6 to 8 years of fossil fuel emissions. So who knew? I guess to fix climate change, we just needed to never cut any forests ever again. So let's start there, though, and then, as I said, we'll move into cap and trade later. What can you tell us about this study?
Taxpayers paid for it. That's about the main thing. It's pretty silly. One of the co-authors is Bill Ripple, who you might remember a few months ago came out with the 11,000 worldwide scientists supporting the climate crisis, a four-page paper based on morbid speculation and arithmetic. And this is just more of the same. It's involving people at Oregon State, unfortunately, in the forestry department, even more unfortunately, who are just taking part in this manufactured crisis in order to get a paycheck.
Well, I don't even really understand their thinking. So apparently we're not, if we don't ever cut forests again, that will solve the issue, I guess. I mean, how are you supposed to, I mean, we need wood, you know, we need timber. And so this just seems to be very contradictory to common sense.
Well, and also historical records. Back in the early 90s, they said, let's stop cutting forests. And then we'll have flocks of spotted owls and marbled murrelets will just be breeding everywhere. And it was that nonsense at the time. And people such as myself called them on it, said, you're going to have a lot of catastrophic wildfires as well as rural unemployment and crumbling of rural infrastructures. And this is bad news for our schools and for our rural communities. And it's not going to do anything for birds. Fortunately, they can fly because there's going to be a lot of catastrophic scale wildfires. And so those predictions came true, and so, then they've been ignored.
So good science is testable and then repeatable. I guess they've not cut down forests somewhere and found out that this halted 6 to 8 years of fossil fuel emissions, right?
Yeah, but then you have to take another leap of faith that the fossil fuel emissions somehow are going to create some kind of terrible climate conditions, and it's going to be horrible for everybody. So therefore, don't log. There's no common sense to it, there's no real science to it.
No, it's all computer modeling again. So what happens then if there's another volcano?
Or a Columbus Day storm or anything else. These models are silly. They're just assuming that the forest is static, it's going to keep growing, and nothing will ever happen to it, which is flies in the face of common sense, personal experience, and documented history. That's why I say the worst thing about this prediction is taxpayers are paying for it.
Hmm. So speaking of not having common sense, let's talk about the Democrats in the legislature. They are going to be working overtime this year to try to pass a cap and trade bill. Their grand compromise that they think is that they're going to start out by just taxing people living in cities for now, and then eventually they'll pass along to everybody else. You know, this just is nonsense in a lot of ways. But I have a better idea. Let's just make it completely voluntary. And let's see how many people or companies really want to do this. It would be like a live demonstration of market research. What do you think of the Democrats' efforts now with the cap and trade?
Well, I hate to be partisan, but at the same time, that's why this is a political issue and not a scientific issue. We have the Democratic Party saying we're having a climate crisis and the best thing to do is change your light bulbs and buy an electric car, which is nonsense. You might as well do rain dances if you want to change the weather. That's an impossible task. But the main thing is that it creates a lot of economic disparity between the rural areas and the urban areas, and it's just based on politics. That's why Democrats want more tax money, and they think I don't think they can solve the problems with more money. I think this is just a device by which they can gather more money.
Did you see that Portland has recently instituted a new penalty? I forget what exactly they called it, but it's the first time, I guess, in the nation that they're going to be punishing people that aren't green enough. Did you happen to see that?
Yep, I used to live in Portland, and they're right. Portland is weird. It's setting an example for the rest of the nation that isn't really... it's ridiculous. The whole problem with homelessness that's exploded in Portland, and so we've got legislators worried about straws and plastic bags and how to get more taxes. They're not looking at the real problems they've got, and then they're going for these hands in the wallet type of approaches that based on scare tactics. It reminds me very much of the Middle Ages, where we had priests saying, "If you don't give us money, you'll burn in hell."
Yes.
But now it's like, if you don't give us money, your grandchildren are going to hate you because they'll burn on Earth or something. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, if they'll even be alive, apparently, because we're all going to be dead in what, 12 years now, I guess? They keep moving those goalposts, so I'm not even sure what year we're supposed to be dead now anymore.
Well, all the glaciers were definitely going to be gone from Glacier National Park by now.
Yes.
They even put up signs. Taxpayers paid for those signs that, you enjoy the glaciers while you can because they're all going to be gone by 2020. Back in 1990, they were making really similar gross predictions for 2010 with Kilimanjaro and rising seas and Florida be underwater. And it's all nonsense. It's modeling, and it's a diversion of funding that should go towards actual scientific inquiry in my perspective.
Yeah, you would think, but politics and science are not always a good mix. Let's go ahead and take a break early. Coming back, we'll have more Dr. Bob Zybak talking about that cap and trade that Oregon is trying to push through. Everyone stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Dr. Bob Zybak. He holds a PhD from OSU in environmental science. His academic focus was in wildfires, and he's our longtime consultant for issues of forestry and timber. And Bob, speaking of wildfires, all over the news the last week or two has been these wildfires down in Australia. And, you know, it's kind of funny. One of the things that I saw repeatedly and on Twitter and other places is that the left is now saying, well, see, all of these massive wildfires are proof of global warming and climate change. And in part, they're trying to blame the new Australian government that took over because apparently they backed away from a lot of the climate change nonsense that their predecessors were doing. Well, it seems to me that these wildfires are because of that previous administration, because they refused to do any logging, they refused to do any brush clearing, and now here we are with this massive wildfire.
Yep. These fires were scientifically predicted based on management. And they've got nothing to do with any kind of climate crisis. That's just the feeble excuse they're using to justify all of the people they put out of work and the very few people that have profited by this process.
Mm. Now, you had mentioned during the break that you had just come across a fairly new article there by American Thinker that pretty much debunks this whole thing, especially about the Green Revolution.
It doesn't debunk it so much as just repeat what a lot of us have been saying for a while. They've gated off a good share of the forests and what they call bushlands in Australia, and the fuels have built up, and so now they're having an extreme weather event. It's got something to do with climate. It'll be averaged into all the other weather events over time to determine a type of climate, but it's very predictable. I think they've arrested about 180 people, 10 or 20 of them directly for arson, the rest for negligence, but it's people setting fires in an environment that has become overgrown with fuels. The very thing that Oregon State says we should be doing, that's what we have been doing to some degree, what the Australians are doing, and we're having the predictable catastrophic wildfire events that result from passive mismanagement of our lands.
So, from Oregon's standpoint, if you like your wildfires in Australia, you can keep your wildfires here in Oregon because we're doing the same thing.
We're proving it. Eagle Creek, Chelmeopsis Wilderness, we've talked about this in the past. These are predictable events caused by poor management decisions and have nothing to do with climate. They've got everything to do with seasonal weather patterns and sources of ignition.
Hmm. Well, moving on to cap and trade, because that's one of the big things we had wanted to talk to you about. And it's there's been some actually very interesting letters to the editor lately down in California, the LA Times. We'll link those up on iSpyRadio.com. And there's both people that say that this just simply isn't working. It will never work. It just can't be working. One person I thought was really spot on, because you're essentially pushing all of this, the responsibility for emissions and everything, over to China. And we know China isn't interested in this sort of thing, where we ought to be trying to manage things much better here at home. But one of the things that I found to be really interesting is that under their cap and trade emissions, emissions from oil and gas sources have actually increased by 3.5% since they pushed through this cap and trade. So once again, we're back to this notion that it's nice that you say that you're going to be cutting back emissions, but the reality is it never happens. All it is a giant money scheme.
Yep, it's politics. It's not science.
Bob, you're supposed to give a much longer answer to that.
It's dirty politics. It's not science. I think the thing is, this has been going on for about 30 years, where we've had modeling predicting these really morbid fantasies of the future, as opposed to those of us that have said, look, at active management has been going on for thousands of years. We just have different tools and different population bases and different amounts of people now. But if you neglect these lands and let the fuels build up, at some point, there's going to be these catastrophic scale wildfires. Mm. And that's come true in Western Oregon, Northern California, Eastern Washington, Australia. These things are predictable, they're preventable, and they come at a great cost economically to our rural communities.
Well, one of the things that the left consistently wants to do is that they want to take a hands-off approach to forests. And, you know, as we said, we're seeing the outcomes of that down in Australia. We certainly have seen it here in Oregon, much closer to home. Where have they gotten this notion that doing nothing is somehow doing something? And how is that supposed to be better than active management?
Doing nothing is doing something. You're making the decision to shut down logging, shut down active management, shut down roads. So that's your doing something. It's a political decision. There's no basis in any kind of biological science on it. When these fires happen, birds can fly, but mammals and amphibians and reptiles get fried. Like, well, they think a billion animals died in Australia. So the excuse used to be, we need this wildlife habitat. And so now, after it burns up, you've got people in California saying, well, it is wildlife habitat. It's black-back woodpeckers. It's going to take us 400 years to get back into the natural cycle. And these are racist positions, because 400 and 500 years ago, we had large Native American populations that regularly harvested firewood, used it on a daily basis, and set landscape scale fires for a wide variety of reasons. And the result was that we had in Western Oregon, say, we had a beautiful environment that was actively maintained and managed, and there was not a danger of catastrophic wildfire such as been occurring now for the last 150 years or so. 200 years.
Well, getting back to the cap and trade thing, because as I say, they're trying to tamp down industry, especially the oil and gas and whatnot. And I think this was really interesting, this little bit from this one letter to the editor. And I just like to read a little bit of this. It says, California's cap and trade program is meant to put our that's the wrong one. Let me start back over there. The system is supposed to force a gradual decline in carbon dioxide emissions by issuing polluting companies an annual decreasing number of permits to pollute. But it has granted so many exceptions to the program that it is nearly toothless. Since the beginning of cap and trade in 2013, emissions from oil and gas sources have increased by 3.5%. The problem, as the report points out, this is from ProPublica, is that, quote, prices remain too low to deliver on the objectives. And as you read through that article, it really comes down to the fact that they simply want to punish oil companies, period.
They're punishing people, period, and particularly
yes.
Poor people, period. Calling CO2 a pollutant is animal farm stuff. That's ridiculous. When I was in school as a younger person, it was called a building block of life because, well, it's a building block of life. It's not a pollutant. And so by taxing people that use petroleum products and poor people and middle class people get the worst of that, not only are you putting tens of thousands of people out of work and raising prices on basically needed fuels, for heating, transportation, et cetera, but you're not doing anything to the climate. That's just silly.
Yeah.
There's a 3.5%. Are we going to have a 3.5% drop in global temperature that we've only been able to measure for a few decades? Of course not. So the whole thing is it's like the word conservation. It used to mean wise use, and now it means benign neglect. So they're just changing the vocabulary on us. And it's pretty bothersome, really.
Well, Oregon really wants to tie into California's cap-and-trade program, and I think looking at the result of that, it's pretty clear that cap-and-trade is just going to harm small business. Big businesses, these big oil companies and other the big polluters are just going to find means to absorb the costs and game the system, and small businesses will be forced out of business. Big business will just continue to thrive and continue to pollute, so it doesn't solve anything. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with Dr. Bob Zybak, and we'll be talking about some exciting court cases that are actually good for the forest. Stay with us. And welcome back into our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Dr. Bob Zybak. He holds a PhD from OSU in environmental science, and his academic focus was in wildfires. And Dr. Bob, earlier we were talking about these massive wildfires and that the wildlife, especially birds, can at least flee. We see another result of some of these wildfires, which is that the Californians flee as well. They will flood up here into Oregon and Texas and then wherever else they go. And It's unfortunate because they really do tend to bring their politics with them. And for the life of me, I don't understand that. Is if you're leaving California because of politics, shouldn't you leave that politics, that political mindset behind?
Well, that would seem to be reasonable, but again, none of this process is reasonable. For the last 30 years, we've had computers predicting the future for us, a morbid predictions, whether it's climate change or endangered species. The modeling has taken over the teaching and practice of science, and it's absorbed most of the of federal funding to conduct research, and it's precisely what Eisenhower warned against in 1961, that the government would, if we weren't careful, would, using giant computers, is what he said at the time, would take over funding away from legitimate scientific enterprise and use it as a method to develop regulations. That was the fear, and now it's the reality.
Yes.
It's just an accurate prediction.
You are echoing some thoughts from my opener, which is that all of the innovation tends to follow the funding rather than follow the normal market forces, and it's really unfortunate that we're at that point. In the time that we have left with you, there is some good news out there, and that's always nice to end on. And Oregon counties had a huge win. This was a group of counties that had banded together and sued the state over lost revenue because the state was not allowing them to harvest the forest. I mean, this is, by law, this is what they're supposed to be doing anyway, is cutting that timber, using that for the common school fund, using that for roads, and on, all these things that we used to do here in Oregon. What did you think of that lawsuit?
I thought it was wonderful. If you noticed, it was on the very topic we're talking about. The state took an Oregon State University predictive model called 4Plan in the early 2000s and said, oh, our model shows that you can get almost as much timber to meet the law as you have been getting and still make these giant reserves for animals that we would like to live there. And so after 15 or 20 years, they looked at the numbers and it all turned out to be BS. So it's the exact same problem. And so the suit was a real breath of fresh air that, wait a minute, we had binding agreements. You put literally thousands of people out of work. You've cost our schools and our counties hundreds of millions of dollars. And we're getting wildfires out of this. So it was a real breath of fresh air to see some common sense and legitimate concern for active management win a victory like that.
Well, you mentioned all of the job losses there, and one of the most poignant moments, I think, that we have ever had here on iSpy Radio was probably in our first year when we were talking to a county commissioner down in the southern part of Oregon. And he was saying how life used to be there in their logging communities. You had these small schools. They had great roads getting to those schools. They had a full education department there where they were doing art and music and phys ed and had sports, you know, high school sports and everything, at a time when some of the city schools were actually cutting back on that sort of thing. And everybody was fully employed. They had great income there. And then these laws started coming into place, and these mills were driven out. And now the second generation, having watched that fall apart and remembering what that was like, and now they've got these teachers sneaking food into kids' backpacks because they weren't sure that they were getting fed at home. And to think how things used to be, and if we just returned to common sense here in Oregon, we'd be back to those days of when these communities would be fully employed.
Well, they're fully employed. We had beautiful parks. As you say, we had great infrastructure. We had jobs. And the important thing was those are family wage jobs. You could support a family and pay taxes rather than going on food stamps or Section 8 housing.
Yes.
And you didn't need even a grade school education. You needed experience and capability. Whether it was to drive a truck or spread rock or plant trees or cut timber or serve food or to charge rent, whatever it was, in all of the jobs in cash flow, it didn't require college education. Now, these new modeling jobs require lawyers to enforce them in court, and that means that a small handful of white-collar workers, whether they're university professors or government employees or environmental lawyers are doing very well at the great expense of our rural communities. So it's exacerbated the urban-rural divide a lot.
Absolutely.
Well, plus, the other thing is that these things were predictable. Everybody said, look, if you do that, our forests are going to start burning up and our rural communities are going to suffer greatly. And that's happened. And then they said, oh, climate crisis.
Yeah. Well, and plus there's the whole notion of the dignity of work and being employed versus being on the public dole. I mean, that's a complete mindset change for sure. As far as this lawsuit is concerned, do you see this changing anything at the state level?
Not immediately, but certainly they're going to have to come to the table because pretty quickly there's going to be interest building up. They're going to probably have to challenge it, but at least it's out in the open now. The real problem has been that the public has been, I don't think by design, by neglect. They've been misinformed and held ignorant on these issues. They don't know, as in the past when people were second or third generation at the worst from a farm, now they're fourth and fifth city generations, and they really, there's nothing in our schools or our media giving people information about what's actually happening.
Mm. Well, one of the big problems is a lot of these mills have shut down. It's going to take a lot to get those put back into place. Do you think that will be an excuse to not log here in Oregon? About 30 seconds.
We've got plenty of excuses not to log. We've got way more reason to resume active management, whether that involves building mills or not, that's a secondary question. But we've really got to start paying attention to our resources.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Bob, unfortunately, we're up against the clock, but I want to thank you so much for your time and also for all the great insights.
Well, thanks a lot, Mark. I've enjoyed talking to you.
And thank you for joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show. A reminder before we go, the Timber Unity Rally will be Thursday, February 6th. Their website is timberunity.com, and we'll link that and their contact information, Facebook page, and lots more on iSpyRadio.com. And if you missed something or just want to listen to the show again, lots of good information here today if you want to use it to contact your representative about logging, the carbon tax, the cap and trade bill, and lots more. The podcast version of today's show will be also available on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for today's show page. And while you're there, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. We really appreciate it when you take the time to give us some feedback. And did you catch what Bob said there about not doing anything is doing something? We have bad laws because people stay silent. Let your voice be heard, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.